was saying, tomorrow morning I'm taking Fernando to Parkland to get him registered.
All right, yeah, I'm gonna miss, I don't know when I'm gonna miss, but I had a filling fallout, and I'm gonna go to the dentist.
We're just in wonderful shape around here.
Yeah, I know.
I mean.
All right, let's go to, let's go to establish where we are, Luke 16 again. And I think we're just going to skip down to the last verse. It said in verse 31, he said unto them, if they hear not Moses and the prophets, neither will they be persuaded, though one rose from the dead. Now, let's look at the first one, is John 12, and let's see what happens. The first guy he raised from the dead, which was... Lazarus again, John 12, not the same Lazarus. Okay, this is just before Passover. You know, as we've talked many times, when he came to Jerusalem, he didn't stay in Jerusalem. He stayed in either Bethany or Bethpage. And anyway, I don't want to go into all that. This is when Mary anoints Jesus' feet. And they're at... well, let's just start verse 1. Then Jesus, 6 days before the Passover, came to Bethany, where Lazarus was, which had been dead, whom he raised from the dead. Then they made him a supper, and Martha served, but Lazarus was one of them that sat at the table with him. Then took Mary a pound of ointment of spikenard, very costly, and anointed with the feet of Jesus, and wiped her feet with her hair, and the house was filled with the odor of the ointment. Then one of his disciples, Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, which should betray him, then saith, why was not this ointment sold for 300 pence and given to the poor? This he said, not that he cared for the poor, but because he was a thief, and had the bag, and bare that which was put there, and he was a treasurer. Then said Jesus, let her alone against the day of my burying, as she kept this. For the poor always you have with you, but me you have not always. Much people of the Jews therefore knew that he was there, and they came not only for Jesus' sake, but that they might see Lazarus also, whom he had raised from the dead. When this is the last verse here is the operative verse. But the chief priests consulted that they might put Lazarus also to death, because that by reason of him, many of the Jews went away and believed on Jesus. So again, it's the one raised from the dead, they won't believe him. So Lazarus was the first one. Now let's go to Luke 24.
And here it sort of contradicts that a little.
Huh?
I mean, it says that they did believe on him because...
Well, no, it's the Pharisees didn't believe on him. That's the point.
Oh, okay.
All right, in Luke 24. Luke 24. This is after the resurrection. Well, it was after the Feast of First Fruits, and they were starting over the counting of the Omer. But anyway, and verse 13. And behold, two of them that went that same day to a village called Emmaus, which was from Jerusalem about 60 furlongs. And they talked together of all these things, what had happened. And it came to pass, while they communed together and reasoned, Jesus himself drew near and went with them. But their eyes were holden, that they should not know him. And he said unto them, what manner of communications are these that you have one to another as you walk and are sad? And one of them, whose name was Cleophas, answering, said unto him, art thou only a stranger in Jerusalem, and hast not known the things which are come to pass there in these days? And he said unto them, what things? I can't believe they didn't recognize him. It just blows my mind.
You know, I was thinking about that too, but they all wear the headscarves and stuff like that, I would think.
No, this is, I mean, they may in wintertime, but this is right after Passover. Well, three different times they didn't know him, which is even stranger.
That's probably because we don't recognize him.
And he said unto them, what things? And he said unto them, concerning Jesus of Nazareth, which was a prophet, mighty indeed in word before God and all the people. And how the chief priests and our rulers delivered him to be condemned to death and have crucified him. But we trusted that it had been he which should have redeemed Israel. And besides all this, today is the third day since those things were done. Remember, he told them that on the third day he would raise. So they expected, they hoped, they believed at least that Jesus said that, but now it's the third day and he isn't here. And they're talking to him. Yea, and certain women also of our company made us astonished when they were early at the sepulcher. And when they found not his body, they came saying that they had also seen a vision of angels which said that he was alive. And certain of them which were with us went to the sepulcher and found it even as the woman had said, but him they saw not. Now you got to remember that this, there's a, just, to me it's 100%, but it's not, he doesn't say it, so it can't be 100%. That this, he was with, this is Luke with Cleophas, or Cleophas, however you pronounce his name. And Luke is the one that's writing this from a first-hand experience, because he was the one that was participating, he and Cleophas. Luke was one of the Greek that came to the Passover. He wasn't Jewish. Apparently he wasn't Jewish. He was a physician. He lived at Alexandria, according to any old. And he was a very wealthy and very prominent physician. But then, most of the time, Luke, after all this stuff, Luke, and after Paul got saved, Luke became Paul's companion, I guess primarily because of his frail condition. And so Luke went with him wherever. And we could go on, and I'm gonna shut up, I'll never finish. Verse 25 and 26 are what I wanna talk about. I just love this story and I've read it 1,000 times. Then he said unto them, O fools. And in Greek, it's a lot stronger than fools. It's like, you dumbasses. O fools, and slow of heart to believe all that the prophets have spoken. Ought not Christ to have suffered these things and to enter into his glory? I still didn't know it was him, even though he was talking to him. And beginning at Moses and all the prophets, he expounded unto them in all the scriptures the things concerning himself. Now, the way it's written here, it means that he only looked at the stuff of the Old Testament that concerned him. But that's not what it says. It says that every word confirms him. And it's the way it's said in English. You have the option. Ought not Christ to have suffered these things and to enter his glory? And beginning at Moses and all the prophets, he expounded unto them in all the scriptures the things concerning himself. And they drew nigh unto a village, unto the village whither they went. And he made as though he would have gone farther. But they constrained him, saying, Abide with us, for it is toward evening, and the day is far spent. And he went in to tarry with them. And it came to pass, as he sat at meat with them, he took bread and blessed it, and brake it, and gave to them. And their eyes were opened, and they knew him. Before they were just, he was just a guest that they were, and he was saying some pretty neat things and says, let's stay with us for a while and have supper. You can go later. But it wasn't until he broke bread with them that they knew him. Their eyes were opened. And they knew him, and he vanished out of their sight. The first thing that happened is when someone that was speaking these incredible words, they were impressed and they said, come on, stay with me, don't go. Because Jesus was on his way, wherever he was going. The first lesson is,
importunity.
Yeah. I just can't imagine me being there. Being one of these guys and not knowing it was him. It's obvious that I wouldn't. But
yeah. No.
Until their eyes were opened,
it's no different nowadays. Mm-hmm. It can be right in front of you, but if your eyes aren't open, your ears aren't circumcised.
Yeah, the truth can be you don't see it sitting there right in front of you.
And then, as soon as their eyes were opened, he vanished out of their sight.
That's pretty weird.
That's
pretty weird.
No, it's exactly what has to happen. Otherwise, he's just become another icon. I'm not too fond of icons, by the way. And it just upsets me that they name those little things on the computer screen icons. Because I wouldn't remember the. They wouldn't let me eat with them in Greece when I wouldn't kiss the icon.
Yeah. Well, we don't see anybody kissing their computer screen lately.
I know. All right.
That's a private affair.
And they said one to another, did not our heart burn within us while he opened with us? Well, he talked with us, by the way, and while he opened to us the scriptures.
Yeah, that one catches me this time.
So what happened? The point is, they would not believe even though one is raised from the dead. So they didn't believe when Lazarus was raised from the dead, at least the scribes and the Pharisees didn't. And here, two of his disciples didn't believe, really. They didn't believe, even though he was raised from the dead. They didn't believe until he broke bread with them. There was some big mystery there that it's too big for my little mind. All right, we're going to spend at least today and tomorrow on this idea about that all the scriptures confirm him. Do you understand that, and we've talked about this many times, but from Exodus it's obvious, but in Leviticus it's not obvious because it's all these obscure arcane rules about these offerings and the feasts. It just seems weird. And that's what I thought. Until I said, wait a minute, these offerings must be really, really important if they go through them in this detail. And then I saw that they caused the offerings, and therefore our understanding, or my understanding at least, of Jesus to be made flesh in me. Because I saw him, you know, it's like trying to eat a buffalo that's alive, and you have to cut it in little pieces until you finally can get the little pieces in your mouth to eat it. And he's too big to understand with anything. It has to be made flesh in you. And to me, that's what the offerings do. And that's why we spent so much time. We spent 3 years every Bible study on the offerings.
Yeah.
Anybody feel the same way about the offerings?
I do, and the one that stands out the most to me is the red heifer. Just so clear, the little details each have significance. The small hyssop, the humility, and the large cedar, including the, you know, man's pride, and it's all going into the fire. And the idea that that represents confession.
And the idea is that each of that red heifer is a she, and it's each cedar is a type of a sacrifice.
Okay.
It must be burned by the baptism of fire. All right, let's go to... let's go to some obvious ones. Let's go to Isaiah 7. Remember, the predicate for all this, if they believe not Moses and the prophets, they won't believe, they will not be persuaded, even if one was risen from the dead.
I was thinking of that in terms of people having miracles take place with them, or seeing a miracle take place.
I still don't believe.
And they're excited for a moment, and everything great. Give it about 2-3 hours or a day, and pretty soon it's
back to their own life.
Yeah, and raise the being even the dead being raised, you know, to get you going for a minute.
We are a screwed up people. All right, verse chapter 7 of Isaiah. Let's start in verse 11. Ask thee a sign of the Lord thy God. Ask it either in the depth or in the height above. But Ahaz said, I will not ask, neither will I tempt the Lord. And he said, hear ye now, O house of David. Is it a small thing for you to weary men? But will you weary my God also? Therefore, in other words, everybody is wearied God. Therefore, the Lord himself shall give you a sign. Behold, a virgin shall conceive and bear. And bear a son, and shall call his name Emmanuel. And Emmanuel means God within you. Butter and honey shall he eat, that he may know to refuse the evil and choose the good. What does that mean? From God's perspective, the soul is evil. Everything of the soul or of the mind is evil, and everything good is spiritual. What does it mean that the land is full of milk and honey? That's always the promise, and through Moses. milk as the meat, I mean, as the beginning process of studying the scriptures. It's milk. It's nourishing. It's
pre-digested.
Yeah. And that's why, well, anyway, you have the milk of the word, but then the honey is, well, what does that mean? And for me, it meant, especially it meant when I thought I had God, you know, and I found a contradiction or something in the Bible. And every time there was that supposed contradiction, then it was as sweet as honey to that. When you that revelation of Christ that you see inside you and see it's
yes.
So the land is flowing continually with milk and honey. But milk, as Gary said, is pre-digested. And so as long as it's just as long as you're satisfied with the milk, then you will never eat the meat of the word. It will never be made flesh in you. That's why there's nothing about milk with regard to the afkamen. It's just bread and wine. Because that is the predicate or picture, perfect picture of the word being made flesh in you. But it can't make you anything because now you're just one of the billion cells in the body of Christ. You know, there's nothing special about you.
That's a conundrum.
What?
Well, it's true, there's nothing special about you, and at the same time, you're in the most special place in the universe.
The highest? Presenting yourself the living sacrifice is your reasonable service. But that says, presenting yourself the living sacrifice is the highest that reason could go if you only understood. To be the sacrifice, to die. And now every time the word sacrifice is used, it's your death. I mean, there's no sacrifice without your death. All right, let's go to Isaiah 9.
This is a little bit of an offshoot, but it made me think that one of the functions of religion is to make you feel like or think that you're sinless or can be sinless. And in that condition, you're lukewarm. You're nothing because you think you're just fine.
Well, the other conundrum is that, you know, the hearers of the word and not be doers of the word, not hearers only, but it says the doers don't do anything.
Yeah, just see.
You see the perfect law of liberty. And then the doing, you're dead when you see that. So there's nothing for you to do. Entered the rest as God did from his, and then any works that happen will follow you, never lead you. All right, Isaiah 9. Well, we have to start in 8, I'm sorry. Start in verse 13. Sanctify the Lord of hosts himself, and let him be your fear, and let him be your dread. And again, it means
we started
at Isaiah 8 in order to get this in context. we're in verse 4, verse 13. And we read this about something else, because remember it was all saying of Confederacy, and you're going to gain your truth by an alliance with people and all that crap. So, but instead he says, sanctify the Lord of hosts himself. Let him be your, in Hebrew it's, let him be your only fear, and let him be your only dread. And he shall be for a sanctuary, but for a stone of stumbling, and for a rock of offense to both the houses of Israel, for a gin and a snare to the inhabitants of Jerusalem. And many among them shall stumble and fall, and be broken, and be snared, and be taken. Bind up the testimony, seal the law among my disciples, and I will wait upon the Lord that hideth his face from the house of Jacob, and I will look for him. Behold, I and the children whom the Lord hath given me are for signs and for wonders in Israel, and from the Lord of hosts which dwelleth in Mount Zion. Remember, you don't do signs and wonders. You are a sign and a wonder, because you have crucified the world unto you, and the world is crucified back unto you. There's nothing about you that the world would desire. All right. And when they shall say unto you, seek unto them that have familiar spirits, and unto wizards that peep, and that mutter, should not a people seek unto their God, for the living to the dead, to law and to the testimony? If they speak not according to this word, it is because there is no light in them. And they shall pass through it, hardly bestead and hungry. And it shall come to pass that when they shall be hungry, they shall fret themselves and curse their king and the God and their God and look upward. And they shall look unto the earth and behold trouble and darkness, dimness of anguish, and they shall be driven to darkness. Nevertheless, the dimness shall not be such as in her vexation, when at the first he lightly afflicted the land of Zebulun and the land of Naphtali, and afterward did more grievously afflict her by way of the sea beyond Jordan and Galilee and the nations of the nations. The people that walked in darkness have seen a great light, and they that dwell in the land of the shadows of death, upon them hath the light shined. Thou hast multiplied the nation, not increased the joy before thee according to the joy in the harvest, and his men rejoice when they divide the spoil. For thou hast broken the yoke of his burden, and the staff of his shoulder, the rod of his oppressor as in the day of Midian. For every battle of the warrior is with confused noise, and garments rolled in blood. But this shall be with burning and fuel of fire. For unto us a child is born, unto us a son is given, and the government shall be upon his shoulders, and his name shall be called Wonderful, Counselor, the Mighty God, the Everlasting Father, the Prince of Peace. Of the increase of his government and peace there shall be no end, upon the throne of David and upon his kingdom, to order it, to establish it with judgment and with justice from henceforth even forever. The zeal of the Lord of hosts will perform this. Now how can the zeal, what is the stimulus for the zeal? The Lord of hosts, the only stimulus is repentance. The zeal of the Lord of hosts shall perform us. The government is on his shoulders, not on your shoulders anymore. No more is the government in your mind. All your mind can do is carry around those same idols on your shoulders that they did in Babylon or Tyre or Sidon or Phoenicia. Just carrying around those idols the same as the ancients of the house of Israel. The idols and the graven images written on your walls of your mind, and the graven images that were forged in your emotions. That's why your mind must die. It must be emptied. For that which is not of faith is sin, and your mind cannot do faith. All right, well, that's a start. Take it, big guy. Remember, faith is a verb.
It's a noun.
Hmm?
It's a noun too.
Well, the man has made it into a noun. What faith are you?
It's a noun that verbs.
Huh?
It's a noun that verbs.
Where is it a noun in the scriptures?
It's the person of Jesus Christ.